Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. As we begin the program by talking with you about social media trends, and we'll get some predictions for 2012 as well from Don Stanley, our guest today. He's a faculty associate in my department, actually, Life Sciences Communications, where I teach, and he teaches social media and web courses, and he also owns 3 Rhino Media, which is a social web and strategy business. And so great to have him back to talk with us about what's going on with social media. Certainly, I hope you will join in too. Do you use social media? Why or why not? What platforms do you use and how do you use them? So there's lots we can talk about. And certainly, if you want to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment, even a follow there. Don Stanley, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about 3 Rhino Media first. What kind of, who do you work with? And...
Sure. We work with a variety of organizations. Right now we are working with everybody from nonprofits to a Fortune 500 company. And what we do is we help demystify social web, social business. Spend a lot of time being an educator, doing what we call education-based marketing, which is teaching you how to understand what you need to know to use these platforms for your benefit. And again, whether you're a big organization like one of our clients or a small organization like some of the nonprofits we work with, the tools are really important to understand because they allow us to connect with people who want to know about what we're doing, or in the case of nonprofits, people who we can help out. And so I always make it clear I'm not a technology lover. I'm a connection a connection lover. I love helping people connect, and knowing the technologies allows us to do that. So we're kind of in the demystifying business. So
very cool. And let's, for those who might be wondering, do you have a good general definition of social media?
Yeah, basically, a simple definition is social media is nothing more than conversations that are taking place, but they're taking place online. A lot of times when people hear the word media, especially in businesses and organizations, they think of pushing content out to people, like a TV commercial. But people like to be active and participate in conversations rather than being talked at. And so social media is nothing more than conversations taking place between people and organizations. And there's a lot of tools, or what I like to call channels, that allow us to do that. Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, LinkedIn, YouTube, and on and on.
And if we think about it, is there, I guess, a gateway, if you would call it, you might call it that, to social media for most people? Probably Facebook, or
probably Facebook for individuals. I think that's we're starting to see Google Plus, which came out last July, gaining more traction and becoming more popular. But for individuals, Facebook is probably the key one. When we work with businesses and organizations, we generally start them out with Twitter. So it kind of depends where you are and what you're doing in terms of what tools are the best ones to use. So one of my predictions for 2012 is we'll have the Larry Mueller Show on Twitter. I'll get you there.
Well, and Twitter, you know, so we may have listeners who say, what the heck's Twitter? You know,
absolutely. So Twitter is what's called a micro blogging site. So it is a site, and it's based off, it's a really interesting story that one of the gentlemen who helped co-found Twitter was really interested in how much information New York City cabbies could share with one another in really short periods of time, and realized that people can share a lot of meaningful conversation in short little snippets. So he came up with, along with another gentleman, came up with the idea of Twitter. And with Twitter, what you can do is you can share content or talk about content in 140 character bits.
Yep.
And that's called a tweet. And it is amazing how many people, including myself, I raise my hand as guilty here, that when I first got introduced to it a while ago, I was like, really? People use this? And what? And why? And it took me a little bit to get it. But once you start understanding, it's like anything, you start understanding the language or the culture of a tool, you start to see it is an amazingly powerful tool for being able to create change. As an example, if you look at data about how people get information, about political events, about things like when Osama bin Laden was assassinated, mm-hmm. for example. If you look at sports news, a lot of that is communicated via Twitter. And so it's a great channel for, despite the fact that it's limited to 140 characters, for being able to connect. And just a little side story that I share in my classes is that people say, well, how far can Twitter really go? Well, Columbia Business School and the Wharton School of Business at University of Pennsylvania, as well as the University of Iowa, are experiencing what's called the Twitter effect. And to get into the business school at Columbia, or to be able to get in the business school at Wharton, you have to write an essay. And now the essays that you can write are limited to 200 characters. You can write them no more than 200 characters. You know, these are pretty prominent institutions that generally are looking for depth, but they're looking for people being able to communicate clearly and concisely. And the University of Iowa last year gave out a $39,000 scholarship to a student based on who provided the best tweet as to why they should get the scholarship. So it's pretty interesting.
Very cool. Well, Liz in Madison has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Liz. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Liz.
Liz, are you there?
Yes, I am. Let's see. Now that we've all been brought into social media like Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, I'm becoming concerned about the many news reports of these accounts being hacked. Mm-hmm. I'm even more concerned about press releases from the FBI, CIA, and Department of Defense that they are recording, analyzing, and even creating fake accounts and personalities to wage war on these social media outlets. This isn't what we all signed up for. The social contract has been broken. Mm-hmm. Why should we continue to deliver ourselves into the hands of wolves? Merely having our personal information sold to advertisers seems like small potatoes compared to these abuses.
Hmm. I definitely agree that security, privacy, and anonymity online are huge concerns. And in my courses on campus, that's one of the topics we address. We have an expert come in who talks about privacy, security, and anonymity. Basically, what do you give up when you use some of these sites? And it is always amazing to me to watch the students' reactions while the individual is giving the guest lecture, because these students grew up in a world where they don't know different. You know, we did. We grew up where we didn't have mm-hmm. these tools. We knew how to exist without them. And the look of shock, and it is literally a look of shock on a lot of the students' faces, realizing, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that there is a dark side to these things. That, yes, you do need to be aware and conscientious when you're using the tools, most definitely.
And there are ways to do that.
Yes,
there hopefully, are. I mean there. Unfortunately, there are. I mean, even sites that seem to be secure mm-hmm. can be hacked.
Yes, and that's one of the one of the biggest challenges of living in this age where, as Liz points out, using these tools, there are causes for concerns. The reality, one of the things to note though, is even if you're not on those tools, your information is in so many databases, whether it's companies you use the credit card or bank card, or I mean, it's mind blowing. So, a lot of content is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Liz, for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, I'm always kind of amazed at the end of the year, our credit card company will send us a review of our expense or what we charged mm-hmm. over the course of a year, and you get quite a picture of. We did that or we went there. But you really do get quite a picture of a family's habits.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
By looking at purchases like that.
Yeah, the data mining is what it's called. And one of my favorite websites for any listener who wants to learn more on some of these topics is TED.com. It's a fabulous website where tons of experts on amazing a range of topics talk about different things, but you can go and listen to some of the technology experts and you can look up things like privacy and anonymity online and see what it is that to what it is to pay attention to, but also looking up the concept of data mining, which means when you're using these tools, a lot of people will say they're free. And no, they're not. They really mm-hmm. aren't, because your information is the price of admission to using some of them. And good, bad, or indifferent, it's something we all as adults need to think about using. Again, I do use a number of them, obviously, but thinking of, well, what are the companies getting out of it and what are they doing with the information that they're collecting? Some of it can be really helpful, but some of it, not so much.
Thanks again, Liz, for calling. Scott in Cato, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This topic that you're having this morning is quite interesting for us, for me. I am a program chair at Globe University in Appleton, and right now my peers and I are in a process of learning how we can use social media to create a more interactive classroom setting, both for our online and in ground students.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard the TED.org option, but I'm wondering if
TED.com,
other...
isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
TED.com.
I think they might have
.com
and .org, but sorry.
Okay. But I'm just wondering if there's other resources available that speak to that topic of using social media as an interactive classroom tool.
Absolutely. And you can certainly contact me, and I'd be happy to share my experiences. For example, in my courses on campus, students are required for class participation to use Twitter in addition to the live conversation. To learn about the tools, you need to interact. One of my favorite tools for looking at using Twitter in the classroom is a site called tweetsmarter.com. Now, they cover a ton on Twitter, so it's not just education. But if you look up the husband and wife team there, what they do is they cover everything Twitter, keeping up with news, tips, advice, etc., is they do have a section on using Twitter in the classroom. The other site, another person to check out, you probably heard of, his name is Chris Brogan. And Chris Brogan talks a lot about using Google Plus in the classroom. That's a good emerging tool and allows some interactive features that I'm experimenting with in the classroom this semester. I've been using it with clients quite a bit, but using it a little bit more in classroom to increase engagement with the students. And so if you look up Chris Brogan and Google Plus in the classroom, he has a number of resources there.
And Very good. Thank you for your lead.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Don Stanley, our guest today. We're talking with him about social media trends, and he has some predictions for 2012 as well. Don's a faculty associate in life sciences communication, also owns 3 Rhino Media, a social web and strategy business. Questions for Don, give us a call, or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page and post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking social media trends with Don Stanley today. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in again. Call us at 800-642-1234. Every line is filled right now, so I think we should just go back to the phones. And Dominique in Chicago, we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello.
I had a question in regards to security for social networks as far as it goes for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I have 5 of them.
Yeah, 5 kids.
Now, only my 2 oldest are allowed to have a Facebook at this time. One is 14, the other one is 12.
Okay.
But I want to know, what can I do to keep tabs on that in respect to where I'm not, as the kids would call it, lurking on their pages 24/7?
Sure. And I have kids as well, not quite in the range where they're using the tools yet, so I might not know everything on this one, so I'll give you the best answer I can. And one of the things is that when it comes to lurking, is it that you don't want your kids feeling like you are looking over their shoulder? Is that
exactly like I'm not? I want to protect them, but I don't want them to feel like I have them by the shirt tails.
Sure, and that's actually a parenting question. In my case, when it comes to things like that, whether or not my kids like it, I do pay attention. Hopefully down the road they'll see the reasons, because a lot of young kids, I know when I was that age, I was not aware of all of the stuff that you needed to be aware of, that you pay attention to as an adult. There are some tools. One of them, I think it's called safeeyes.com, that will help you monitor behind the scenes different activity that kids are having, not only on the social media accounts, but also on the web in general. And, you know, I actually like to tell my kids that I'm using stuff like that just so they're aware that it isn't a surprise. And I explain, you know, it's not that I don't trust you, but, you know, and they don't always like that, mind you, but it's important to, you know, to keep them safe. I mean, that's first and foremost, and hopefully down the road they appreciate that. Sometimes they don't right now.
Well, you know, with Facebook.
Well, there's some way to, like, you know, talk to them about what goes on and what they need to watch out for, and then
correct.
Somehow implement those measures without them feeling like they're being infringed upon. I've already called my daughter out several times on things that have been posted on her page by her friends,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like I get shunned. I mean, I get that part.
Sure. Well, the other thing is that there can be conversations that you wouldn't see on her page, private conversations that they can have. And, Don, are there ways that you as a parent can...
You mean like through Facebook?
Facebook?
Yeah, that's where a tool, again, like Safe... I think SafeEyes does it.
SafeEyes does that?
Yeah, I think it does is one that I would use. Because, again, you know, I care about who my kids are hanging out with, and that's important. And sometimes, again, they don't appreciate that now, but hopefully when they get older, they will. So I think you're doing a heck of a job.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Dominique. Appreciate your call. Tanya in Stevens Point, we're turning to you next. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, I had a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I was wondering about your stance on teachers friending their students, either present or former, on Facebook or Twitter, or even posting about their day. I know in other, you know, sorts of businesses, if you're having a bad day, you can sort of vent on Facebook and things like that. But if you're a teacher, is there a different sort of line, or, you know, where do you draw the line for that?
Now, what level are you teaching, just to get a point of reference?
I'm a professor.
Okay. My rule of thumb is no active students are friends on Facebook. I use Facebook very, very strategically. I have my group of people that I want to connect with that I keep pretty small.
Right.
So when it comes to things like LinkedIn, Twitter, of course, is an open channel. There, I'm obviously more liberal, and I use Google Plus a fair amount. And with Google Plus, you can do these things called creating circles, which Facebook has something similar to this now, where you can segment people and say, this is my group of friends, so anything I want to share with friends goes here. This is my group of current or former students. Any content that I tag or mark, designate as for students or former students, they can only see that. And
so in
terms of that, I'm fairly restrictive, again, because yes, there are barriers. You just like in your personal life, you have certain groups that you do certain things with. I think it's important to manage the same way online, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've just pretty much the same thing myself. I certainly have current students and a lot of former students on LinkedIn with me, but in terms of my sort of personal Facebook page, no.
Yeah. And does that help answer the question?
Right. I mean, I'm not friends with any of my students, present or former, just to make that line real clear for myself. But I think there was a New York Times article back when saying teachers should not be able to, you know, vent about their days or complain about students, even in anonymity. And there was kind of a controversy about that. You know, should we be able to talk about, you know, if we have a really hard day with a student, as long as they're anonymous, you know, is that fair game, or is that completely, can we not talk about those types of things because of our profession? Does that make real academic freedom a threat?
Sure. That's a great question.
Yeah.
And I'm very cautious about what I do and what I share when it comes to things like that. And usually, you know, my personal stance anyway is if I'm going to be in a position like that, I'll ask for somebody's opinion and say, have you dealt with this before? But again, I usually have those conversations offline or even through email or a phone call if it's something that I'm unsure about. So,
okay.
There you go, Tanya.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Rick in Waupun, turning to you next. Hi, Rick.
Hi there. Appreciate you taking the call.
Sure.
You bet.
I'm a businessman, and I blog weekly on a trade journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am on LinkedIn, but I don't Twitter, and I don't get on Facebook or Google Plus. And I'm wondering if I should be doing that kind of thing to help build the consulting part of the business, or should I be just letting it be as it is now?
Well, how is it going for you right now?
It's getting some business, and we've got some consulting coming in because of it. But I'm not sure if I'm missing something here because I'm not going further with the whole social media thing.
Sure. I'm going to recommend, and this is a fantastic, one of my all-time favorite resources, a gentleman whose name is Mark Sheridan, and he has a website called thesaleslion.com.
The saleslion.com.
And he has... He started with HubSpot, which is a great inbound marketing company, which is a lot of the techniques used to build business using social tools. He actually has a 200-plus page ebook, which is fantastic, that you can download for free. And he talks step-by-step about how he used social media to build his pool business, because he's in the pool business in West Virginia, and kind of walks through step-by-step strategies in very, very clear layman's terms. He's also an education-based marketer, so I'm a big fan of his stuff, meaning he makes things clear, concise, and helps you understand and kind of demystifies. But what he talks about, and it's something that I've been a proponent of for a long time, is finding and mastering tools one at a time before engaging in the next ones. So having a plan for what you're doing, testing how it's working, seeing if you're getting results, and making sure you feel comfortable with it. Once you feel comfortable with it and getting some results, then add on the next tool. My personal favorite is Twitter for business. I use a lot of connections between Twitter and blogging. That's kind of the starter package that I like to use. And a big thing when it comes to growing your business is know that the mantra, and it's one of the things that three rhinos in my business represent, is we do business with people we know, we like, and we trust. And in this age of social, the way people get to know you and like you and trust you is by you sharing information, not trying to sell. So right. They want you to, and that's where Marcus Sheridan, again, with the Sales Lion, talks a lot about that. So looking at how you can offer more value to people so that they want to share your content, build relationships with them so that you can be seen as a trusted source that, hey, we want to do business with Rick.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, you can join in too, question or comment. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Have open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Bob in Madison, you're next. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Thank you.
Hey, Don. This is Bob from Social Media Breakfast and Did It Direct. How are you doing?
Excellent.
A great job, buddy.
How you doing, sir? Great to hear you.
Doing good. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of chime in on some of the social media groups that are in Madison, and I know that... Don's been, he actually was one of the people that helped welcome Scott Monty from, who was the head of Ford's entire social media networking effort into Madison a couple weeks ago. And the group is really, really doing a great service. I'm one of the co-managers. And we've had groups, as I know with Scott Monty, we had over 340 people or 35 people. And I just wanted to make the listeners aware that it's called Social Media Breakfast Madison. And it's a real great resource. And I know Don is part of that, and as well as I am too. But... you know, they'll help, they'll certainly come. We all come to, social media is a little different because we share a lot of our successes and failures, and we're an open group, and it's not like the old days. I've been marketing for 30 years. I mean, boy, in the old days, you'd hold everything pretty close to your vest, but it's a great group, and I just wanted to see if there's any other groups out there that are really trying to help out.
Hmm.
Well, the one that I'm most familiar with is obviously Social Media Breakfast in Madison. And thank you, Bob, for calling. And Bob, by the way, if you go to my webpage, I had a chance to be lucky enough to interact with Scott Monty, who in social media is a rock star. Forbes magazine just listed him as one of the top 11 people. He was listed as number 11 in the world for using social media to create influence. Just phenomenal guy. And Bob was nice enough to snap a nice photo of me and Scott, and made me look a lot better than I normally do. So I appreciate that, Bob. But yeah, the social media breakfast in Madison is the primary one that I'll utilize. A lot of communities have these, which is, it's a gathering of people who are interested in social media. You get together once a month, and it's a huge range of people, from people who have no idea, no experience what it is, to people who have been using it for a long time and using it very successfully, who come together and share ideas and connect. So that's really the biggest one that I know of in the area. I know there's some small, what we call mastermind groups that get together, but I'm not familiar with any others in the Madison area.
There may be, but certainly in Milwaukee, around the state, I would think there would be.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Several.
But yeah, I highly encourage you, if you're in the Madison area, to check out Social Media Breakfast in Madison. Just some really great people, great topics, great conversation. And Bob is, like you said, one of the co-managers and does a great service because it's volunteer and really provides a great service to people who are interested.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. I want to give some others a chance to get on here. Mark in Waterloo, Iowa, turning to you next. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Mark. And how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Great, thank you.
Great. Well, I have I guess not a unique situation necessarily, but it's my situation. I do editing of court documents for court reporters, editing and proofreading. And it's a very, my population that I market to is very narrow. My problem, I guess, and I think you might have addressed this a little bit before, is I equate it to sort of like trying to take a drink of water from a fire hose.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's so many things I could do. Outside of having a website set up, I don't really know, what to do next or what to do first, I guess, in a sense. So your thoughts on that?
That's a great question. One of the things to talk about, again, an education-based marketer means that you share information to teach them about what's important in your industry. And so the first thing, obviously, with any product, any service, is you think of your audience. And in this case, you've got a nice narrow audience. And a lot of times that makes it easier than harder. And think of, well, what are the things that they would want to know about? What are the things that they have lots of questions about? And then think about, what's the best way for me to provide answers for them? And so a lot of times, like in this, your situation, what I will start with is first thing is to find where those people exist online, who really wants your content, and find out where they are. Listen to them. There's a number of tools you can use to do what's called social media monitoring, to find out what people are asking about your product, their service, or industry. And those conversations, regardless of topic, no matter how minute the topic is, there's people who are actually online talking about those. And then figure out how you can best help them. So a lot of times what people will do is they will start creating blog posts about, the five best ways to identify a quality court reporter, or three tips for doing accurate court reporting, or whatever, again,
whatever
case might
be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times, making sure that you're sharing tips from your industry, which is what I'll do a lot of on Twitter, is sharing those out and using those two together, where I use Twitter to create connections, and then use that to try to drive traffic to not only my website, but other websites where people are providing good content that's value for your community. And that's where you start with that relationship building, and you start to become seen as a trusted source.
Mm-hmm. Now, my population that I market to is sort of in two main groups. It's sort of the, probably 45 to 50 plus, not comfortable with social media type of thing. And then all the newer court reporters that are just entering that profession are all younger and, grew up with this sort of thing. So I guess what would you do for the former population? And again, maybe the sales line, if that's maybe the book I need to go read next, maybe this is where I'll get most of my answers. But your thoughts on that one is a little bit of a dichotomy there.
Yes, absolutely. What I would say is concentrate on one audience first.
Okay.
Focus on really serving them, because they do talk offline. Because we forget that social media is online, but still we're people and people interact offline. Is that you get really good and really useful to one group, which will help you develop confidence and see the value in what you're doing so you don't feel like you're wasting your time. But don't forget that they're going to be conversing offline as well, and that can help start build some, hey, you should be on and checking out Mark's stuff, where the younger groups are talking to some of the older groups. And, you know, you're not going to necessarily get everybody. I wouldn't concentrate on getting everybody.
Sure.
I follow something called the Pareto Principle, which is a 20-80 principle that says 20% of your audience will create 80% of your business. So really focus on serving those 20% and serving them well. And then if you can provide value to the others, you know, certainly do that. But really focus on one audience first before jumping to the second.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your feedback on that. I appreciate it.
Very glad to help.
Thanks a lot for calling. And again, you can join in with your questions or comments as we talk social media with Don Stanley at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. A follow-up question about security and personal data. Once you're on, isn't all that in, if you decide to delete your account or get out of it, your the information that you had originally put on there is still there? Is that that's the question?
It's not supposed to be stored long term, and that's one of the big questions with the ethics of organizations. Who, we'll take Facebook as an example. There was actually just a court case in Europe, in Germany, where a gentleman decided to, who's a law student over there, decided to do some investigation to see what happened to his data that he put on Facebook. Now, every 30 days, I think it's 30 days, I may be off on that, but it was like 30 or 60 or 90 days, that data is supposed to be
those
removed.
Data are gone.
However, saying you're doing something and actually doing it are different, and he was able to find that Facebook was actually retaining this data for extended periods. So they aren't supposed to keep it long term, but whether or not they actually follow through on it, that's one of the big challenges, is making sure that companies, businesses, and organizations do remove that content.
Facebook question from Diane: is there a resource to study how to take a traditional curriculum, financial education, for example, and translate it into shorter postings to reach a new audience?
Oh, maybe absolutely.
Blogging, would that be a...
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a huge thing that we do with a lot of businesses and individuals, is teach them how to do that. How do you take what you already have and translate it in a way that makes sense for sharing online? So blogging is a fabulous one, and coupling that with things like e-newsletters, which a lot of people forget how powerful e-newsletters are, and email actually still is. Because unlike Twitter and Facebook, if I were to send you an email that you signed up from me, I'm not competing for your attention with lots of other things on your screen at the same time. So ebooks and email newsletters are great ways to break up content. And yes, a couple of resources to check out. One that I would start with is problogger.net. Problogger.net with Darren Rouse, and he has some really good tips and suggestions. You know, you can email me, or of course I'm happy to help, but that's a great place to start, to say, how do I take things and basically create a curriculum or a concept or a series of posts to be able to make things more engaging and entertaining and exciting for my audience.
Excellent. Let's go to Keith in Waukesha next. Hi, Keith.
Good morning. You've got a great guest who's given good advice. One of the callers asked about a place to find more resources, and a great place is meetup.com,
yes.
Like when you're meeting up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great place to have get together with people in real life, and you can enter your zip code and do a search and find all kinds of groups that meet for breakfast or lunch once a week, once a month, and that sort of thing. I've been organizing a group for about 9 years, called Wisconsin Business Owners in the Milwaukee area. And we've had local authors. Wayne Breitbarth, principal at M&M Office Interiors in Pewaukee, has spoken twice about LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book called The Power Formula for LinkedIn Success. We just had Joan Stewart, a.k.a. the Publicity Hound, talking about blogging again. Sonny Ahuja for Twitter. A lot of great resources at meetup.com.
That is a great suggestion. Thanks for reminding me of that.
Yeah, meetup.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you, Keith.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Thank you.
See, this is social media in action, where the audience helps each other out. That's a great, great way of demonstrating, you know, how it's supposed to work.
Harry in Viroqua, on to you. Hi, Harry.
Hi. I had a comment and a question. My first comment is I heard earlier one of you say something about the price of some of these social media sites being that your information is on there, mm-hmm. your personal information. Well, I'd like to bring up another price, and that I see the price of using a lot of these social media, as I see it, is illiteracy. The spread of illiteracy, and by that I mean the narrowing down in society in general of the capacity for people to communicate in writing and in speaking and in listening and in reading, and those are the four things I teach as literacy in English, as an English teacher. Now, my question is, if you know of any sites or any tools in particular that people can use to purge all or the most possible amount of their personal data from all social media sites. I'd like to do that. Yeah. I'd like to purge myself from Faceplant and from any other media site that might have any information at this point about me.
Mm.
Because I don't believe in it. I think it's pitch.
All right.
I cannot tell you a good answer off of the top of my head. I would have to investigate, and maybe a listener would have an answer of the best way to make sure that you're purged. Because there's things you can do, but to ensure that you're purged. One thing that I would add as a comment. So yes, when it comes to, you know, the way that people use English, you know, obviously there's a lot of shortening, etc., so on. But there is a lot of value in terms of the way people connect and communicate. I mean, just a great example is to look at what happened a year ago at this time in Egypt. You know, people mm-hmm. using it to connect and communicate. So, but that's one of the interesting things is the rate of change of how our culture is changing so quickly and the way we use the language. There's a lot that can be left to be desired when it comes to proper use of the English language. I hear you, Harry.
Thank you very much for calling. And I want to give John in Milwaukee, you have a quick comment or question.
I was just, I had just tuned in kind of late, but I know you guys were discussing social media organizations in Milwaukee. And I just wanted to make you aware, we've been working for the last couple months on bringing an official social media club chapter to Milwaukee. Through Social Media Club International, and we're actually having a kind of a town hall meeting on February 22nd to bring in individuals interested in kind of helping form the first board, really helping the community in social media, having education, and then monthly events.
Hmm. Excellent.
And again, that's where would we go to learn more about that?
We have a Facebook page, so you can find us at Social Media Club Milwaukee. That's
okay.
Where we're doing our communication right now. And then we'll be kind of blasting out via the social channels. We just kind of got the date approved this morning for February 22nd to hold our town hall meeting.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. More good information. And Don, thank you. Our time flew by here.
Lots of great questions. Yeah.
Lots of great questions. Well, hopefully you'll come back and be with us again.
Absolutely. Really enjoy it.
Don Stanley, faculty associate in life sciences communication, but owner as well of 3 Rhino Media. It's a social web and strategy business. And we will have him back. Sorry we didn't get to everybody. And maybe you can take a look on our Facebook page. If you see some questions, Don, you can comment on that. That would be great. So
absolutely.
He will do that. He'll take a look at that. And we'll be taking a look next at the weather. Tell you what, we've got our weather guys coming up with some fun and informative conversation. Steve Ackerman and John Martin with us next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.